Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to The Delicious Podcast with me, Julie Smith. And this week I'm in a tree house in West Sussex with the delightfully named Isabella Tree, the author of Wilding, which has been hailed as one of the most important contributions to the debate about where and how we get our food and our relationship with the land. Now, we first met Isabella a few episodes ago when she was championing the role of grazing animals in a debate called Can Veganism Save the Planet? But now we're looking out over the hundreds of acres of former Sussex farmland, which she and her husband, Charlie Burrell, have returned to the wild, and where only last month a pair of white storks became the first to breed in the wild in Britain since the 15th century. And as she tells me about the recipe that sums up their extraordinary story, we spot a beautiful red stag just below us. I ask her how old she thinks he is.
I don't know. I would say sort of maybe 4 or 5, actually. He's got a tremendous sort of rack of antlers on. Mm. But they grow very fast down here in the south. You know, we're used to seeing stags in the north of England or in Scotland where they have, you know, can be very old. And actually, a royal is usually the oldest, you know, stag there is. But here, they grow these almost sort of bizarre to us, look very extravagant rack of horns, and he's just nibbling on some dog rose, I think.
Now, this is your home, and we're going to be talking about what tastes like home for you. You've chosen a recipe that helps you tell your story of this place, but this is your home. You've lived here for...
Since the 1980s, so gosh, I mean, however long that is. What's that? About 30 years, 35 years or something. That's when Charlie, my husband, inherited from his grandparents, so it was about 1985. And it was literally, if you're looking out from here, all this would have been arable. So ploughed, every inch of the land that could be ploughed was ploughed. So we're now looking onto, to me, what looks like African thorny scrub. Mm. Mm. But in, say, 2004, 2005, this would have been a field of maize. Mm. So it's amazing, literally amazing, what's happened in less than 20 years, really.
Yeah. Let's talk about that recipe that tastes like home.
Oh, well, I've chosen a steak, pure and simple. I've chosen an old English longhorn steak from specifically one of our free-roaming old English longhorns. And that, to me, epitomises just the whole kind of raison d'etre of this project, because if we didn't have those free-roaming animals here, this amazing sort of thickety, thorny scrub would disappear in, say, 20, 30, 40 years' time and become closed canopy woodland, which is very species poor. So what we have here right now is something that is so biodiverse that we've got, you know, some of the rarest species in Britain. We've got turtle doves and nightingales, we've got lesser-spotted woodpeckers, peregrine falcons, you name it, we've got them here. And that is because we have these free-roaming animals driving the system. So they're browsing, they're disturbing the vegetation, they're churning up the soil. Their impact with vegetation creates this kind of battle, if you like, between animal disturbance and vegetation succession. And that creates the margins where all life lives. Mm. So without these free-roaming animals, we would not have such a successful conservation project.
Yeah. Now, you're often brought out to make that argument for grazing animals in the context of the rise of veganism. We met on that University of Sussex when you were on that panel with a number of different vegans. First of all, how was it to be on a panel with a bunch of people who were really on the other side of the fence?
I'm full of admiration, I think, for what the sort of vegan movement is doing. It's really making us think about what we eat, and that is hugely important. We just cannot take what we eat for granted. And what they're doing to make us understand about the horrors of factory farming is absolutely right up there in my books about what we should be doing. And we should certainly not be feeding grain to animals. It's unethical, it's unsustainable, it's unhealthy for the animals, and it's very unhealthy for the people that eat those animals. So on every level, it's unethical. But we have to recognise, I think, it's much more nuanced and complex, the argument about whether we should be allowing animals, livestock at all on our land, because livestock animals have been here for millennia, for literally for millions of years. They've co-evolved with our vegetation, and they are part of the nutrient cycle. So if you're trying to restore soil, for example, and we know that our soils are in a critical condition, we know that there's 60 harvests left globally before our soils
probably
run out, less by now. Certainly in places like the Fens in England, we've probably only got about 15 years left in some places before there's no topsoil in which to grow anything.
Yeah.
So even vegans are going to be stuffed.
Yeah.
So we have to restore our soils. The fastest, most efficient, and the natural way to do that is with free-roaming animals as part of that mix, grazing animals. You have the dung and the urine that is pulled down into the soil by dung beetles and all the other invertebrates that recolonize the soil. They recolonize the soil with nutrients and minerals and bacteria, and that kickstarts the whole thing again, starts the microbiota in the soil, start aerating the soils, and you get life back into the soils.
Yeah, worms are very good things.
Worms are amazing things, a keystone species. Darwin knew it, and we'd forgotten it. And so we really have to look at systems that are going to involve allowing pasture as part of the rotation again, just like we used to before the Second World War, before we became chemical addicts. We've got to remember how to rotate our crops and allow the land to be fallow. And if it's going to be fallow, it then needs to be grazed. And that enables, as I say, that the soil to be restored using dung and urine, and the trampling of the hooves of the animals gets the vegetation back into the soil. So if you're going to do that, then it makes sense that you're eating those animals, because obviously you can overgraze. It's a fine balance between undergrazing and overgrazing. You can do mob grazing as well, in the kind of Alan Savory holistic management type of thing, where you're moving large numbers of animals on so that the land behind them can recover.
And then the chickens peck at the
cowpats, exactly,
and the worms and the beetles come in. Yes.
Absolutely. So you've got the Joel Salatin subsystem where, you know, it's a caravan of different species of animals that are moving through the landscape, all adding to the nutrients in the soil. And the other thing I think to remember is that while we've been producing more and more food, our crops have actually become less and less nutritious. And that's because we're just putting chemicals on the land. So we're putting, you know, nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium. Basically, that's it.
Yeah. Let me just ask you, I mean, we're here in your land. You can do anything you like with it, although you have had some pretty horrible stuff from the neighbours who bring their dogs here to walk, and they're not very happy about you not keeping it very tidy. It's the Victorians, you say, who are responsible for our idea of what the countryside should look like.
I think it is. I think it's that sort of Victorian obsession with tidying up that they have a lot to answer for. But also, of course, it's the first time that we, you know, with the Industrial Revolution, that we had the machines that could clear things up for us very easily. So, you know, before the Victorian era, it would be very, very difficult to clear this land, to get rid of this scrub. And yet, you know, once you have the machines, you could go through with those big machines that they have in the Forestry Commission, could go through this field in, you know, in half a day and turn it back into a workable tilth, get rid of all that scrub.
Yeah.
So once they had the means at their disposal, I think, you know, we became ever more obsessed with being neat freaks.
Exactly. And that is one of the problems of modern day farming. With the rise of agrochemicals, you know, farmers have an opportunity to play with all sorts of ideas of how farming might be. And in somehow doing so, they've lost literally the plot.
I think so. I think we can't, you know, blame the farmers. It's the system that is driving the farmers to do certain things. It's really subsidies, where we went wrong. It's paying farmers to to produce year on year without letting the land rest, to plant, you know, specifically crops like oilseed rape, maize. It's the whole skewed system which is geared towards arable, no matter where you are, whatever land you're on, and however detrimental it is to that soil.
What can the delicious listener take out from this?
I think absolutely we should support farmers who have high welfare standards, but particularly farmers that are organic, and particularly farmers that produce meat that is purely pasture-fed. Beware of the label grass-fed, because that means that an animal can be fed on grass for 50% of its life, but the rest of its life could be fed on grain, or it could be finished on grain.
Yes, and that phrase finished, you say, well, it can actually undo all the good of the previous year's grazing.
Yeah, so you could have an animal that has spent most of its life out at pasture, but they will fatten it up for even just 6 weeks of its life towards the end, when they want to fatten it up for before slaughter. And that 6 weeks on grain will change the fat.
Exactly. So people should just go to their butcher or their farm shop and ask for
pasture-fed. And it can be specifically if it's accredited by the Pasture for Life Association.
Mm-hmm. And the Soil Association, presumably.
And Soil Association Organic is always fantastic too.
Yeah. Let's go back to that recipe of yours. The meat that you're talking about, the organic meat, has so many different nutrients in it that you wouldn't find in supermarket meat. Tell us a little bit about the health benefits of it.
Well, again, this is organic and pasture fed, and so it's proven, with there've been state reports in the States and independent reports in the UK as well, both verifying that the fats that animals put down when they're pasture fed and organic are high in this amazing substance called conjugated linoleic acid, CLA, which is one of the highest anti-carcinogens, so one of the highest cancer-beating agents in nature. But it's also the fats that these animals put down is also very high in omega-3, which is very difficult for, we have to eat that ourselves, we can't produce it as human beings, so we have to eat that. And that is crucial for brain development and for heart health and all that sort of thing. But it's very important to have omega-3 and omega-6 in the right ratio, again, that we can metabolise easily. So quite often, I think, in a vegetarian or a vegan diet, it's too high in omega-6. And that comes from vegetable fats. And we're beginning to realise that actually too many vegetable oils, too many vegetable fats in our diet are also bad for us. We need to have this balance of omega-3 and omega-6.
Yeah, so for you it's less but better, plant-based diet.
Absolutely.
But good meat less often.
Absolutely. Eat less meat, but be really careful about where you choose it.
Yeah. What are you going to serve with this fantastic steak of yours?
Well, I think because it's almost like gilding the lily, so I think it's really it has to be cooked absolutely beautifully, so it and rested, so you have it sort of, I like it pink in the middle, and rested for 5 or even 10 minutes afterwards, so that the juices go back into the steak. Hugely important. But I would serve it with, in the winter, some fresh horseradish from the garden, so make a horseradish cream. And then in the spring, I mean, or like now, a lovely salsa verde, and perhaps throw in a little bit of wild garlic ransom in there with it.
Thanks for listening to The Delicious Podcast. Next week, I'll be learning how to cook like North London Greek chef Theo Michaels. Don't forget to rate and review The Delicious Podcast and follow its adventures with the hashtag The Delicious Podcast. I'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.